Thank you very much, Yanis, and thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it. And as the chairman introduced the talk, I will be talking about composites, and I will start with a little bit background. So the first time that I presented something in a conference was in Bristol in Comtest 2004, and actually, and I already was talking about this, about delamination, cohesive elements, and these things. So this has been almost 20 years since then. So it's a big history. And I was very proud at that time that I won the best poster of the session award, okay? And they give me a very nice bottle of champagne, of French champagne. So maybe this is why Comtest is one of my favorites conference. And I said it's almost 20 years ago and still talking of the, on the same topic. So it was a good selection of the PhD topic, no? But why I'm here today, it's not typically that a member of the same group that is organizing a conference is giving a keynote speech, okay? But when Giuseppe emailed the members of the scientific committee proposing or suggesting some keynote speakers or speech, one of the members of the committee that's actually sharing the session, he was pointing at these points, no? So he said, there are many researchers that has to use or who use cohesive elements, but they don't ask, they don't know what is going on inside. There is another group that they think that this is meaningless, that they are not physically based, so that we cannot count on them. And there is a third group, no, that has to use cohesive elements, but they have a lot of questions or they want answers, no, based on the physical background, no? And okay, so this is just, I just copy-paste the email from Yanis. He said, okay, there is an answer, there is an experimental identification of cohesive law, different things, and then, okay, the group in Girona has a long track on this, so this is why I'm here, and I would like also to thank you, to thank the scientific committee and all the members of the community for doing this, for giving me to this opportunity, okay? So I will not put equations, so I don't have equations in my presentation, so I just want to have a discussion on the applicability of cohesive elements and how we identify the parameters and how we can be sure that what we are using, no, it's going to be close to what we are looking for, no? We want to simulate the mechanical behavior and we are using a numerical approach, okay? So the question, no, or the message, okay, I need to capture delamination with my finite element model, okay? How I will start? Okay, the first thing that I need is material data, okay? So I go to the people of the lab, and I say, okay, I need fracture toughness, no? Delamination is a fracture problem. This is the curve, mode one curve, no? Load displacement curve, and then if this is from the experiments, then if you reduce the data, you have a lot of information, no? So if you ask the guy from the lab, what's the fracture toughness of this material? They don't give you an answer, they give you a table, no? So if you look at the nonlinear point, it's around 600, no? If you look at the visual inspection, no? Visual inspection is when the technician has seen that the crack is moving, it's around 635, no? When there is a 5% increase of the compliance, it's two times this, no? 1.2, no? And if we look at the propagation data, it's 1.6, okay? This was a bonded joint, no? So, okay, which is a fracture toughness, no? Which value should I use? I want to use this in my cohesive element, no? Which one should I use, no? So there is a big difference on the different values, and this is a mode one example, but this is the same material under mode two, and we again have a big difference, no? From the visual point, the visual is when you see that the crack is moving, to the propagation, no? So when you have cell similar crack law, okay? So this is the data that I get from the technicians of the lab or for the material provider, okay? And then I want to use Abacus, no? Or SAMCEF or ANSYS, whatever, no? A finite element code, and there are cohesive elements, okay, nice. So I have here some parameters that I need to put in my model, okay? One is the fracture toughness, okay? So which one do I select, okay? So this is the first question that I can have, okay? And I think that one of the points, so if we don't have, or one of the approach that we can use, say, okay, if I don't know which one to select because I have this table, let's try to use the lowest value because I will be conservative, no? Is this a good approach? Let's check it out, okay? I've just taken this from yesterday's presentation from Santiago Rodriguez. So this is the field hold test that was presented yesterday, okay? And here I ask to perform the simulations, changing, keeping all the parameters constant and only changing the G2C, the mode 2 fracture toughness, getting the onset value, this was the visual inspection point, or the propagation value, okay? So the onset value or the propagation value was, for this material, 3 times higher than the onset value, no? And we can see, okay, so the failure of this specimen that Santiago shown yesterday is an interaction of different failure mechanisms, no? Delamination, matrix cracks, fiber damage, no? And the final failure is driven by fiber failure. But what we see is that in this axis, when the vertical axis, this is the strength, and in the horizontal axis, these are different laminate configurations, okay? And what we can see is that for some configurations, it doesn't matter, no? Because so most probably the failure of all these laminate configurations was not affected by the delamination, okay? But for other configurations, for example, for this configuration, this was having an impact, okay? But if we look at this configuration, no, 50-15, we see that using the onset value, that it's lower, okay? It's not the conservative approach, no? Because we are thinking that this will be, the strength will be higher, no? So it's not a direct answer, okay? So what's the most conservative option? Okay, let's, you cannot be just that getting or taking the lowest values, you are going to be on the safe position. This can be the other way around, okay? And this is because the final failure, it's always driven by the interaction of several damage mechanisms. There is a load redistribution, so if there is some damage, some delamination, this causes a load redistribution that can change the failure mode or whatever, okay? So what's the answer to this? The answer is the cohesive law, okay? If we want to get accurate predictions and reliable, okay, we need to go for defining properly the cohesive law, okay? So I'm not talking about the fracture toughness, I'm not talking about the strength of the material. What we need to identify is the full cohesive law, okay? So what is the cohesive law? This is the first question that we have, no? What is the physics behind the cohesive law? Let's go to try to underline it, okay? From a mechanical point of view, no? What's the mechanics of onset and propagation of delamination? Okay, let's just start for a mode one test, and here what we can see is two material configurations, no? This is a woven composite, this is a unidirectional composite, for example, okay? And what we will see at a micromechanical level is that, okay, we have some initial pre-crack, okay? Then ahead of the crack tip, there is a region where there are some micro-cracking, no? And when you increase the load, then this micro-cracking increase, and then the micro-cracks coalesces, and then this generates a new free surface and increase the crack, no? And this is one material system, and you have here some damage mechanisms that develop, okay? This is another material system, and the damage mechanisms that develop are different, no? Because here we have fiber bridging, and in this region we don't have fiber bridging, so depending on the material system, the material geometrical configuration that we will have, the micromechanical, no? Damage mechanisms or failure mechanisms that will undergo will be completely different, okay? So then what we can see is that from a micromechanical point of view, no, the onset and propagation of the lamination is a sequence of different failure events, no, that occurs at microscopic level and that they coalesce and then they generate a new crack, okay? This is a representation for the mode 1, then if we move for mode 2, then it's different, no? Mode 2, we have more shear caps and these things, okay? So, what we need to represent is this behavior, okay? We want to represent this behavior. The problem is that if we want to simulate, no, these big structures that has been shown during the conference in some presentations, with and capture what's happening here in very detail, making a very detailed micromechanical model, this, then the simulations will become impractical, no? Unless you use the model that David Mullenhauer presented yesterday, no? But from a practical point of view, if we want to capture what is happening at this micromechanical level, but from the mesoscale, okay, then what we will use is, or we need to make some simplification, okay, and we are going to read off to identify exactly what are the micromechanical damage mechanisms that develop, and we are just going to see this from the distance, and from the distance what we see is that there is a fracture process zone, okay, there is a region where the material is linear elastic. There is a region where there is an initial crack, free surface, but then there is a region where the material has undergone some damage, no? So if we go to the previous slide, this is the free surface, no? We have a crack here, and this yellow part represents the fracture process zone, okay? So then what we need to have is a tool that describes, no, the behavior or what happens at this fracture process zone. Okay? How can we do this? Well, one approach is using cohesive elements, and this is what we are going to discuss further. But before going to this, I think that it's also important to mention the Arcurve effect, no? So in this first example that I put, that the properties, the onset point for the visual delamination inspection and the propagation was a large difference. This means that we will have a strong Arcurve effect, no? So this slide tried just to introduce, no, this, no? The combined effect of various micromechanical damage mechanisms makes that the fracture toughness increase as the fracture process zone develops, okay? At the beginning, for example, we don't have fiber bridging, and then when the fracture process zone is developing, we have more fiber bridging, that then this increase the apparent toughness of this interface, okay? So this is something also important to have in mind, and I will come back to this later on, okay? Sorry. So, let's move now to try to identify how we can characterize, no, the behavior of this, no, of the fracture process zone. Okay? I think that here the most important hypothesis is that if we want to follow in this line, going for a cohesive element or cohesive zone model approach, we need to assume that all the material deformation and degradation of the mechanical properties due to this microscopic failure process can be lumped to a surface, Okay? Everything can be represented of what happens on a surface. Okay? So what this can look like as a very hard hypothesis, but okay, it's the same hypothesis that you do when you measure the fracture toughness. No? When you measure the fracture toughness is that you can assume that all the fracture will happen in a plane. No? If you have, for example, a laminate where there is delamination or fiber splitting or so on, then there is no way to measure, for example, the translaminar fracture toughness, no? Because all the failure mechanisms cannot be collapsed to a surface. Okay, so I think that this is one of the key points of the approach, okay, of this approach, no? Of applying the cohesive zone model approach. Okay, and this is what we are going to do. Okay, so we are going to just assume that all of these micromechanical damage mechanisms that appears can be lumped to a surface, okay? Surface that ideally is a zero thickness surface. No? Surface has no thickness, okay? And we are going to represent the behavior of this zero thickness surface by a cohesive law, okay? A cohesive law that relates the tractions at this surface with the openings, with the separation between the upper and lower bound of the material surrounding the surface. Okay. Okay. So this is just to better understand how the cohesive law works. So, for example, if we go back to this picture that I've presented before, we have here the crack tip, we have here the fracture process zone, and here we have the region where the material is linear elastic, not damage has undergone here. So if we look at the traction separation curve, this point one here has not dissipated energy. This point two and three has undergone some damage, some degradation. So we have dissipated some energy, and we will move to, for example, point four, that it's very close to the crack tip. This has dissipated a lot of energy. Okay, almost all the micro cracks are coalescing here. So this is close to be free surface. So it means that this lagging crack tip is increasing. Okay. And is this relevant? Okay, so this is a very simple example, a DCB test. If we solve a DCB test and we compute the load displacement curve of a DCB test just applying linear elastic fracture mechanics, we are going to have this propagation curve. So it means that the peak load that we are going to predict is this point, okay? If we use a cohesive element representation, then what it will have is that at some point, the material will start to degradate, no? Some micromechanical phenomena will happen, and then as this degradation increases, then all the fracture process zone is developing, and when the fracture process zone is fully developed, then you reach a similar crack growth, so then the linear elastic fracture mechanics applies, no? So then the peak load and the shape of the load displacement curve that you have in this region, this is strongly dependent on this, no? On the strength of the material and the shape of the cohesive law, okay? How do we implement this in cohesive elements? I'm not going to extend this, but one approach can be using cohesive elements. We have another approach, no? With XFEM, with AFEM, with, okay? We are just now taking the approach of using cohesive elements, so it means that we have a mesh where we discretize the plies, and then between plies we put a cohesive element, okay? That ideally should be zero thickness, okay? The initial thickness should be zero, or we can do also, instead of using cohesive element, a cohesive contact, no? This most of the commercial codes have the two options. And is this working? It's working, no? Or at least the people use it, no? So I put here a single lab shear example, and this is a This is a thermoplastic material that we test three months ago, and it was in a COVID project, so a lot of delays, a lot of things undergoing. Okay, so it means that we did the test after the simulations. So the specimens arrived very late. Okay, and well, here we have the load displacement curve of both of the simulation and the test. No, we test several configurations. The only problem is that you cannot see here the gray curve that I plotted here. I'm sorry for that. But what I can say is that we have very good technicians in the lab, and they manage to fit the numerical, to fit the test to the numerical prediction. It's a pity that, with the screen, you are not looking here at the experimental curve, but the numerical curve just fall in the middle of the experimental experiments with a very low scatter in the experimental data, and this was a blind prediction. There is nothing that we do here. Okay, and here we predict we compare the DIC and the finite element simulation, and we can see this, no, that we capture the onset and growth of the delamination, and both are comparable. Eh? We have here at different load levels and our applied displacements, and you can see on the left the finite element result, and here on the right the DIC. So here there was not visible fracture process zone or crack, and then the crack increases, and at the end we capture everything. Okay, so this is just to say that, okay, so this approach works, okay, and for some configurations very well. For others, we need to check what's going on, especially when there is interaction with other failure mechanisms, okay? But one of the key questions is this, no? Is the shape of the cohesive law, okay? So then the first question is, okay, so for the fracture toughness, we have ASTM standards, whatever. What about the cohesive law? There is no any ASTM standard, but there are ways to measure it, and I'm aware that for the ASTM D30 committee is also working on trying to do an standard on this. And basically, there are two ways to measure the cohesive law. One is a direct approach, and another is an indirect method. Okay. Yesterday, no, Ruben Erives presented a direct method to measure it, no, following the work that Ben Sorensen developed. But mainly the point here is that if we want to characterize that load displacement curve, okay, we have something that's the opening, that this is something that we can measure, no? But then there is the traction that we cannot measure, the traction at the crack tip of a DCB test, no? So how you do this then? So then, well, most of the direct methods there are based on the J-integral approach, and then from the J-integral approach, you have this expression that measuring the crack openings at the crack tips, you can compute the J integral, and from this you can obtain the cohesive law, since the tractions is just the derivative of the J integral curve with respect to the openings. Okay, so this is a method that it's available in the literature, and I think that it's the most straightforward method, but it needs some good equipment, eh? Because you need to measure very small displacements. Eh? The openings are very, very small. Okay. Another approach is using an inverse method. Okay, and presenting here, or just making a snapshot of a method that was developed in Girona, but there are others. Okay, actually, there is a INORSE somewhere there that she also developed a similar method than what I present here. No? But basically, the idea of the inverse method is that from the load displacement curve, okay, and with some calculations, no, so here you have a Python script So you introduce the low displacement cure, you have here a Python script, and you get a traction separation law, okay? And what happens here, you don't know, okay? There are the questions, you can go to the paper and try to understand, but it's, it is not. And then from this, okay, so this is the output that we get, the traction separation law, it's something like this, but then this is something that you will not be able to put in the finite element code, or at least you will have a lot of convergence problems due to these jumps, so then you need to make like a smooth, and then okay, so this is what I get from the experiments, this is what I will put in my model, okay? So we have it, okay? So we know how to measure the cohesive law, we have direct method, we have indirect methods. In the literature there are different options, and actually in the last ComTest edition there was just a plenary lecture focused on this. And this slide is just to mention this, no? That the cohesive law is different between for mode 1, mode 2, mode 3, or mixed mode, okay? So there is another problem here that I should put the PDF, not a PowerPoint. I use a Mac and this is a Windows, and sorry for that. But just this slide is just to say, okay, that the cohesive law shape depends on the mixed mode, okay? But this is something that Ruben already shown yesterday, okay? So then we have this, no? For mode 1, we have some sort of cohesive law, for mode 2, different, and then for a mixed mode, we need a way to interpolate it, okay? We can also measure, but we are not going to measure the mixed mode cohesive law for all the mode ratios, so we will need to make some interpolation. And this slide is just to show an example of how this cohesive law also can depend on environmental conditions, okay? So here we test some bonded joints that were wet aged for 4 years, and we test under different temperatures, no? Cryogenic, room temperature, and 80 degrees. And here there is a representation, for example, of the influence of the temperature on the cohesive law, okay? And we can see that there is an influence of the temperature not only on the toughness, okay? Also on the strength, okay? This is also that I was already discussed yesterday, no? From the last presentation of the day, okay? But also on the, if there is wet age or not wet age, there is a big change on the cohesive law shape, okay? So cohesive flow shape, so it's not only toughness that is affected by environmental conditions, it's also the full cohesive flow, eh? The strength, the shape, all of this. Okay, let's now discuss how we implement this, how we can implement. So we have the cohesive flow that we have measured for mode 1, for mode 2, mixed mode 50%, mixed mode 75%, but we want to make a simulation, no? The first question is, I want to simulate some delamination problem with finite element code, so I need to put this in a code, okay? And this is some work that has been done by Vas Tais, okay? That where we compare the both approach, using the traditional approach or using the inverse method to obtain the cohesive law, and we implement in Abacus using the tabular option. So in Abacus you have a tabular option where you can define the dependence of the damage variable with the opening and the mode ratio. Okay? So you can do this, and with this you manage to implement any shape of the cohesive law. Okay? But then here you don't know how the mixed mode interpolation is managed, okay? So this is Abacus, that what it's in the black box of Abacus, it's how it's managed, okay? And we apply this approach, for example, for a material system, a thermoplastic that has a lot of fiber bridging. You don't see, that screen is better than mine. So for this material, there was a lot of fiber bridging, okay? And here you can see the difference, okay? So if we use a linear softening cohesive law, the linear law that typically everybody uses. The blue curve is the prediction, but the real experimental behavior is the black curve. Okay, so if you want to capture the black curve, you need to go to introduce the right shape of the cohesive law. Okay. This material system, it was also particular because, for example, here there are different tests, okay? But these were the same material test system that was tested in different times, okay? One by Antonio and the other by Pepito, okay? Well, the Dutch version of Antonio and Pepito, because this was tested at UDelft, okay? But you can see here, okay, that if we look at DCV1, DCV2, this is the average of the experiments. You can see that the experiments are in gray, okay? But there are two kind of families, no? That ones that have a lower propagation values, okay? What was the difference between one family of specimens and the other? Is that one family were experiencing more fiber bridging and the other less fiber bridging, okay? But the material system was the same and the manufacturing conditions in principle were also the same, okay? So it's just a matter of uncertainty, no? So it's, and we need to manage this, okay? So, and if we look at the J curve, no? This is the R curve that we also commented before. We see that this, the black one is for the specimens that they were experiencing lot of fiber bridging, and the red curve is for the specimens that were not experiencing fiber bridging. Okay, what I'm putting that emphasis on this. Okay, so from this the J curve, we obtain the cohesive law. Okay, so and then what we have is that the cohesive law for the black or the red curve will be exactly the same up to this point. Up to this opening, the shapes of the cohesive law will be exactly the same. And when the shape of the cohesive law will change after this point, okay? When for the black specimen, we have a tail, a long tail, due to the fiber bridging, okay? So then, this is a good example that, to relate this, no, that we have a shape of the cohesive law, and this shape of the cohesive law, it's clearly related to the different failure mechanisms that happens at the interface. So if you have less fiber bridging, you are not going to have a tail. If you have more fiber bridging, you have to have a big tail, no? As also was shown yesterday by Ruben, okay? So then another point that I said is that in this implementation approach, the mixed mode interpolation is managed by Abacus, so you don't know how it's going. And here, for example, this is again some simulations done by VAS, okay, where the way that the tabular, this table, was defined was different. Okay, in one approach, all the mixed mode data was provided, but in one of the simulations, the data for B equal to 0.1 was removed. Okay. And then we saw a completely different approach, no? So the red curve here compares to the other red, okay? Or the blue curve compared to the other blue curve, okay? So this is a mixed mode bending 50% test, and the only thing we have entered the same curve, the same cohesive law for mode 1, for mode 2, for mixed mode bending 50%, but in one we have defined mode 1, mode 2, 50% and 10%, and in other configuration we have only defined mode 1, mode 2 and 50%, okay? And you can see that the prediction that we get is strongly dependent, okay? And this is, okay, we cannot control this because we don't know how this mixed mode interpolation is handled in Abacus, no? So then this is why I decided to go for another option where we can also control the mixed mode interpolation, okay? And in this way, there is a work already available from Simon. It's here from Aalborg, no? Where they implement multilinear, no? Mixed mode cohesive law, okay? And we follow similar approach, but instead of this, of following this approach, we go to an approach that also was introduced by Carlos Davila to simulate a city test, that is just the superposition of the of bilinear, no, or linear softening cohesive law. Okay, so but here instead of just duplicate elements at the same place with different cohesive law, we did everything on the subroutine. Okay, so and this is a recent work that has been published by Sayed Abdel, and what we do is this. Okay, so from the inverse identification, we have this input law that we want to introduce in our finite element software, and instead of introducing this, we inside the UMAT subroutine. So this is the input for the UMAT subroutine, but the actual implementation is this. Okay, so we identify several bilinear cohesive law. Okay, and this different cohesive law can be attributed to different failure mechanisms. Okay, this is the approach that we follow. Okay. So we move from a linear softening law for a multilinear softening law, and we also control, no, the mixed mode interpolation, okay? With the benefit that we can have different mixed mode interpolations for each of the segments of the cohesive law, no? So for example, if this this yellow part is attributed to fiber bridging, okay? In mode one, we are going to have a big tail, no? Because in mode one, we have a large fiber bridging zone, okay? But in mode two, there is no fiber bridging, okay? So this needs to go to zero, okay? So this is how we can also control this, okay? We apply this, okay? First for a bonded joint configuration, and you can see here, well, this is mode one, mode two. There is no trick here. This is the mixed mode behavior, okay? The red curve is the prediction with this approach. The green curve is that the prediction if we use just a linear softening law, okay? And you can see that the over-prediction on the load is quite high, okay? Exactly. Okay, and just to finish this presentation, just another example, okay? This is again the same material system that was tested by Vastikes, no, with a large process zone and a lot of fiber bridging, okay? And here we use five cohesive law, five segments to simulate this under static, but what happens under fatigue, okay? We also tested this under fatigue, okay? These were tests that were done by Jordi Renard, he did a presentation on the first day. And these were the same tests. This is the multi-fatigue test rig that is at the entrance. And what we did, or what Jordi did, is just run this multi-fatigue device test with different initial openings. So it means that you have different severities for each specimen, okay? And what we notice here is that, okay, there is an offset on the crack growth rate depending on the initial conditions and the severity that you are putting on the specimen, okay? So then the question is, okay, are we able to capture this with a cohesive element, okay? So we have a cohesive zone model implementation for fatigue. I'm not going to detail here, but you can find on the references, and also there is a poster session by Iñaki during this session where he's who actually has done these implementations, okay? And then here, what we did is that, okay, so we are using a superposition of five cohesive law. Let's make an assumption, okay? Let's make an assumption that the three segments, no, cohesive law 1, 2, and 3, they will undergo a static and fatigue degradation, and 4 and 5 only static degradation, okay? This is something that it can make sense, but for example, for fiber bridging, if you have fibers and you apply a cyclic load, they will fail with not a large number of cycles. so most probably this part can be neglected, okay? And with the first option, or with the approach that Iñaki applied, is just use all the same fatigue degradation parameters for all the cohesive flows, okay? And then these are the results, and what you can see is that, okay, you see that there is an offset at the beginning of the test, no? You start the test here, and then as the test is running, the crack is increasing, so you are getting these points, okay? But he's not capturing, no, this onset that you have in the linear, no, log-log part of the fatigue degradation, okay? And then what Iñaki did is that just get more freedom on the parameters and then assume that the degradation parameters, the fatigue degradation parameter, will be different for the different cohesive flow. That this makes sense, no? Because we have said that each segment or each cohesive flow is attributed to a different micromechanical damage mechanisms. No? So this, I think that from a physical point of view, makes sense. And then, okay, this is the results that Iñaki obtained, and we can see here that this is in very good agreement with the experimental data, okay? But this has no value, no? Because this is just that you have experiments, you have a model with some parameters, and then you run an optimization problem, no? You just vary the parameters to fit the experiments, no? So this is the other way around that what I said for the single apps here, no? But the good thing, and this is a teaser of Iñaki's presentation or video that will be shown in two things, is that we then apply this, okay, for this configuration that we loaded under fatigue that Jordi Renard showed on Wednesday, changing the block, so having mode 1, mode 2, or well, shear mode, you don't know if it's mode 2 and mode 3 or whatever, and we predict the response using this calibration, and you will see in the video that works, I think, pretty well. This is not published yet, so you don't have the reference here, but hopefully soon we'll have, okay? And this is just to conclude. So we have discussed about the mechanics of the delamination onset and propagation. We have linked this to the cohesive zone model concept to try to get some physical disequilibrium-based background. We have also shown that the cohesive law shapes matters and that it can also be measured. Okay, this is good. We have discussed also on the implementation and the issues that we can have. Okay, and then we have also discussed about the intrinsic relation between the shape of the cohesive law and the different mechanisms that we can undergo at micromechanical level. But this is a topic that is still open for research, no? Because, okay, it's now, up to now, the cohesive law is a black box where you have many things there, and that's it, okay? And we have also discussed about the mixed mode interpolation. This is another point, okay? So I don't know if I ask the chairman's questions when he was proposing this keynote, but I hope that at least we have contributed to, okay, to the discussion.
Thank you, Albert, for very good. So, is everything clear now? Or you still have some doubts, comments, and questions? Oh, okay, you do. Okay, please, Michael, you can start.
Thank you very much. Excellent presentation. I'm very glad I got up sufficiently early. Yeah, so could you comment on predicting cohesive zone from more fundamental parameters and modeling what causes these effects? What's your view on the possibilities for doing that?
So you mean on...
Could we predict the cohesive law rather than having to measure it by doing modeling it at a lower level, for example?
Yeah. I think that this is one of the points to go, no? So just perform a micromechanical model, and then from this, from a very detailed micromechanical model, be able to measure the mesoscale, no, or the equivalent cohesive law, no. And actually, there is some work from Miguel Herraez on this topic. Okay, I think that the big question there is that you need to manage the heterogeneity and uncertainty that you have at the micro scale, no, with a lot of defects, voids, many things that undergo there. And you need to link, you want this to capture a failure mechanism, so coalescence of different cracks. And so this is something that it's not straightforward, and there is a lot of interactions on the model parameter and so on. So it's something that requires investigation, no? But this can be in line of what David Molenauer presented the other day, no? So we have a very detailed model that captures the different failure mechanisms that happens at the micro scale, and then you have a good finite element model that manages the heterogeneity and uncertainties that you have at that scale. Then, with a good homogenization technique, you should be able. Yeah, this is a good point. Yeah.
Thank you for the nice presentation. So you show that. Of course, there are different shapes for the cohesive laws, and the way to evaluate each one of them is, well, at least what I saw in the literature also is that you compare the performance of these laws in predicting the low displacement curve. My question is, if you think that's enough, because I think it's more of a global properties that. Load displacement curve, and maybe you can have a cohesive law that gives you the correct load displacement curve, but maybe locally predicts an incorrect plastic zone or distribution of strains across the arms of that DCB, for example.
I think that this is a key point, because so you identify a cohesive law, and then you compare the experiments with your simulations, and typically you use the mode 1, mode 2 experiments. But then in mode 1, in the fracture test, what is driving the failure is the similar propagation, so it's the full dissipation of the whole energy, no, behind the cohesive law. But in most of applications, the failure will occur before you have dissipated all the delaminated energy, no? Because there is there is some delamination that causes low redistribution. Then this goes for applies to be more loaded, and this will cause a problem, no? So then, for this application, what it will be more relevant is not to have the right value of the fracture toughness, is to have the right characterization of the initial part of the cohesive law. Okay, so this is the point. So depending on the application that you are having, it's to have a good characterization of the initial part of the cohesive law. It's a key point.
Hello, and thanks for such an interesting presentation. My question is a little bit a follow-up on Professor Wisnam's question. It's Bent Sorensen has this micromechanics model of cross-bridging, when he computes the shape of the cohesive tractions, he obtains coupled cohesive tractions. And I just want to hear your opinion about that, because in many direct methods, you have to rely, or it's very useful to rely on the existence of a potential function, and that often leads towards coupled cohesive tractions. I don't know if you have, for instance, in the CheerLab model that you have, you often have normal tractions when you apply pure shear, and so I think there's a little bit of evidence, but I just want to hear your opinion about that.
No, it's always an interaction, no? In this single lab shear, it's not a mode 2 failure, no, or a degradation. But actually, in a mixed mode bending test, it also, so when you test, when you perform a mixed mode bending test of 50%, so the global mixed mode ratio is 50%, but if you look at the different points of the cohesive load, they have a history on the local mixed mode ratio, so there is a difference, no? And then going to this model, for example, from Ben Sorensen, I think that this is a good approach, no? So you can have an analytical model that can capture, or you can compute the contribution of the fiber bridging to the fracture toughness, okay? So this can help you to identify a part of the cohesive load, not all, no? But I think that the key point there is that, okay, this analytical model will be with a very strong assumptions and ideal assumptions, no? But then what it drives the failure are the flaws, no? Are the defects, are the heterogeneity. I think this is the difficult part to handle when you go to the very micromechanical scale.
So, do we have more questions? Actually, I think I have to stop this discussion because otherwise I will have a problem from the next chairman. And
there is one on the back.
Okay, let's do the last one.
Hi. I saw your DIC from the single lap share. And if it matches so well with the CZM, why can you not back out the cohesive laws from such tests? I think, obviously, with single lap shear, you have issues with peel strings. But I've seen somebody using a modified Iopescu test to get a better shear failure. And if you used, say, high-speed DIC, you could monitor the crack growth instead of using like ENF test for fracture, no two fracture toughness.
No, this is a point, and actually this is something that was presented in the last composites conference, no, that was hosted by Ionera, by my colleague Pere Maimi, that with a snapshot of the fracture process zone, and if you are able to measure correctly there the openings from this, you can derive the cohesive law, okay? This is quite straightforward, or can be done very easily, let's say, with Pera's model for pure mode 1, mode 2, okay? But when you have the single lap shear, there is the mixed mode, it's completely changing, okay? So I think that, well, at least it needs more developments to be done, okay? But it's clear that you have a lot of information with the DIC, and it's something that can be explored.
Okay, thank you, Albert, again, and thank you everyone who was actively participating here.